All right, are you ready? We just did a rush journey through the book of 1 Samuel in this auditorium class, and we're headed to 2 Samuel. And so the more I look at these books, the more I'm convinced that we don't study them enough. I am just amazed, really, honestly and truly, at the maze of the depth of messages to be found in this book. And it all has to do with King David. 1 Samuel is David not being king. 1 Samuel is really more about David. Now, it's called Samuel because it begins with Samuel, and Samuel is the transitional character from the time of when the Jews have come out of Egypt. They come into the Promised Land. They're being ruled by judges. And so you've got the Exodus out of Egypt. And then you've got Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. That's all Moses. Joshua helps them take the Promised Land. And then they're ruled for 400 years by judges. Finally, they said, this is not good enough. And they reject what God had in mind for them. He never had in mind for them to have a strong, central, dominating government. They were almost nomadic people, if you'll think about their background. They don't know anything about nations or anything. And yet there are all these nations around them. And so the Lord said, now, you be faithful to me, and you don't even have to have an army. I'm going to take care of you. I mean, that's an exaggeration, but that is about what he said. But whenever they got the judges, they were unfaithful during the time of the judges. That's why the judges were raised up to try to get them to come back, to get them to come back, to get them to come back. And so God says, okay, I'm going to give you a king, and he gives them King Saul. That's in 1 Samuel. And 1 Samuel and 2 Samuel in older Bibles have another name. Now, you have to pick up your grandma's Bible to find these older names. But when the Jews sometimes named these kings, they looked at Samuel being a part of kings. In other words, it's about the period of the kings. And so they called 1 Samuel 1 Kings. They called 2 Samuel 2 Kings. And you pick up your grandma's Bible and look at it, and the older Bibles has in smaller print, sometimes called First Book of the Kings. And then, when you get to 1 Kings, if 1 Samuel is 1 Kings and 2 Samuel is 2 Kings, what is 1 Kings in our Bible? It's 3 Kings. And so they had 4 books of the kings. And so that's not a bad way to look at it. But don't memorize the books of the Bible. People will think you're crazy if you say Joshua, Judges, Ruth, 1 Kings, 2 Kings, 3 Kings, 4 Kings. I mean, that's not the way you say it. But that's what it is. And so we have studied the giving of Saul a king just exactly what they wanted for. He was a giant. The Bible talks about how handsome he was. I had not noticed this until studying 1 Samuel. I had just overlooked the fact. I knew David was stated to be a handsome individual, but King Saul was too. And he had that additional. He was tall, dark, and rich. I mean, how much better, how much more would you ever want? He gave them just about what they wanted. And then he said, that's not what you need. So he selects a second king, and that's King David. A man after God's own heart. And I believe that's the richness of studying 1 and 2 Samuel, is to find out how David treated people. And we didn't do that so well when we studied 1 Samuel. Sometimes we'd get over and talk about it. But if as you read these, it's not just a historical book. It will show you how to treat other people, especially your enemies. So now then, let's go to the outline, to the lesson plan for 2 Samuel. Now, I've got this, and these are my study notes. Well, how am I going to teach this? Well, here's Dan's lessons plan. impossible dates for this study. Why? We don't have that many weeks. So this is a whole lot better outline than the outline that we're going to use. But I was trying to figure out what is really, really important. If you're going to study 2 Samuel, what's really, really important? And so today we're going to start. We're going to talk about the introduction and the overview of the book. Now, we may slip over into April the 13th. Those of you who know I never finish a study anyway will say, that'll be a miracle if it gets over to April the 13th. And he talks about David as when David becomes king. And we may not do it. But these dates are just target dates, and they're all important. And we'll not go through down all of this, but it begins with David becoming king. And look down at the last lesson down there, David's last days. David is 30 years old when you get to the end of 1 Samuel. Think of all that has happened in his life in those first 30 years. You know, there are, in our society is such that some kids, you know, stay home till they're 28. And that sort of the thing, the target date where a kid sometimes leave home? David left. He didn't intend to leave. He carried food up to his brothers, and his brothers were being confronted by Goliath. Remember the giant? And here's David, a shepherd boy. He's got some cheese. What are you doing here? I brought my brother some cheese. And he sees Goliath coming out challenging righteousness. Here's a man after God's own heart. Here's a shepherd boy after God's own heart. And what a great lesson for teens, if we had many teens here to emphasize this, but you may have grandkids who are teens. You might ought to talk to them about this guy who, however old he is, he's not old enough to go to his army. His brother's up there in the army. He's carried food up there to him. And he sees Goliath, and he said, "What on earth is going on here? How can you challenge God?" Now, where'd that come from? Because of David's past life. You remember what he said to King Saul on this occasion, whenever Saul said, when Saul, you know, was going to let him go out and fight the battle. David said, "He delivered me from the mouth of the lion and the paw of the bear." What's that say? Somewhere, sometime? I don't know. But it's a teenager. As a boy, as a youth, he had two experiences. I hope they weren't the same occasion. When the lion and the bears came out, and he had the rod in his hand and the slingshot that he could use. What an unbelievable lesson for teens. And we need to read the Bible, and that's why I said 1 Samuel. That's a brand new point. Never made that point when we started 1 Samuel, but just look at the age of him. And so when we open up 2 Samuel, he's had all of these things. Well, what's happened to him? Well, he defeats Goliath. He becomes a friend of the king's son, Jonathan, and an unbelievable friendship that he has with Jonathan. And then King Saul is trying to kill him. And I've said it this way, but I'm telling you, you've got to understand how deep Saul's hatred was. If you were going to go out and arrest somebody, you know, when ICE goes out to break into a house, how many icemen are there? I don't know, 10 or 12? I don't know. I've not seen that. Somebody pretty bad in there. At least that's their view of that. Well, the Old West, you know, somebody's robbed the bank and they said, "Let's get a posse together." And so here's the sheriff, you know, and he's the sheriff and he says, "Okay, let's form a posse." Now, I don't know. I never counted in the old movies. Remember those? You remember any of the name of those old movie cowboys? You remember the loan? You know that one, right? What about Tom? Three letters. Tom Beck. Somebody's been watching the same TV I have. Okay. What about Hopalong? You understand all that? You know what they got? They got 50 people. Let's get a posse together. Let's go get this bank robber. You know what King Saul, you know how much Saul hates David? He takes his army. Now, it doesn't take all of it, but he sends out his army to capture David. And how David treats King Saul is a part. We'll emphasize that in the study of 2 Samuel. How do you treat your enemies? I know where the inside of me that I hope never comes out to the outside, how I would react if I had an opportunity to kill my enemies. It'd all be over. Jonathan is my friend, and if I can just get rid of King Saul, everything will be all right. And he had two opportunities. Never would he do it. And that's remarkable in and of itself, but by the time he's 30 years of age, he has been traveling from one country to another country. What do you call that, an illegal alien in our days? That's exactly what he is. And he gets over in these other countries. Are you David? Yes. And, we're afraid of you because we've seen you as a general. We've seen you as the captain of Saul's army. And so David has to pretend that he's crazy. You know how humiliating it would be to foam at the mouth just so you'll be able to stay in that land where that king did not want him to stay? And all of that by the time he's age 30. He has Jonathan in the king's house, and he says, should I come back to the palace? Because he'd eaten at the king's table. And Jonathan shoots that arrow, and he goes and he sends the guy to retrieve the arrow. And he says, no, it's farther away, which was a coded message to tell David, you'd better keep going. That's 1 Samuel, 30 years of age. Isn't that amazing? All of that is in the youth of David. Now, I don't know where you make middle age. How old is middle age to you? Well, 95, somebody. 35. What? 35. I know that because you've heard me make this point before. How long do you expect to live? What's your life expectancy? Is it 80? Is that a pretty good number? Now, if you're way beyond that, God bless your heart, you know, with all that you're having to deal with and everything. But if life expectancy is 80, what's middle age? Vincent, are you about 40? I'm just trying to guess. You're not middle age, are you? Way over it, he says, okay. But if you're 40 years of age, you're middle age. Oh, no. Now, what's life expectancy in Saul's day? You know, it's not 76 point whatever if you're male or female or something like that. If you're 35, you're middle age. And there was a time when I was a kid, I never knew anybody over 75 years of age. Isn't that amazing? That is remarkable. That's when I was a youth. You were anciently old at 60 or 65. How does that sound in this day and age? You understand, if you're counting the days until you can get your Medicare, you understand? That's so funny from that. But he's 30 years of age, and he becomes king. Here's what I want us to do. Overview of the book. Go ahead and put up that next slide if you want to give us some indication of it. And those things on that slide you're just looking at are really just target dates. Here it is. There's the outline of 2 Samuel. David's highs and lows. you see on the left side, the ascendancy. When he becomes king, now, when you open up 2 Samuel, he's not even king. King Saul is dead, and he's about to become king, but there's a long road from that slide over there, you know, on the right side, on the left side, where that ascendancy begins, ascending to the throne. And it goes up and up and up and up. Now, it's not, there are a lot, if you made that line with really what was happening in, there are times it's like, you know, you see lines that go up like this, you know, anything, sometimes you see that. If you tried to represent that you'd have a lot of that. But this is what David was. And you need, and I need, to learn as we look at this, this is what life really is like. There are times when everything's going pretty good, you know, and it depends on what age you are and what's happened in your life. But there was a time in which you sat over there on that left side, and you were a dreamer. You're, you know, 10th, 11th grade. You've got it all planned out. You know what kind of car you want. Remember that? I'll just take an old used car. I don't have to have a brand new one. But I mean, but dreamers, what? Here's my life. I'm gonna lay out my life. That's not life. And so here's David. And so whenever that can, 1 Samuel are singing, David is killed, or Saul has killed his thousands, and David's his 10,000s. How's that for a young man trying to deal with life? Praise is hard to deal with. And so that's David. He's a teenager, and the whole nation is singing, you're better than the king. You're at least 10 times, you know, 1,000 times better than king, you're at least 10 times better than the king. It's a teenage, he's in his 20s, and everything's going up. And so the thing that happens, you've got Saul's death. And David's reaction to it, we're not going to spend much time looking at it. We're going to try to cover the entire book today. You've got Saul's death. And you read those first couple of chapters, and that's all David is, just weeping. It's not that he is glad Saul is dead. Saul is his enemy. But he is so concerned about Israel and everything that it's over. So they say, okay, let's make David to be king. But I've got the word there, he becomes king over Judah. Now, if we talk about king over Judah, we're talking about a geographical division that comes along later. You remember when Solomon dies and there's a division of the kingdom? There is a northern kingdom and there's a southern kingdom. Northern kingdom was called, anybody remember the name of that northern kingdom? One of them's Israel and one of them's Judah, and I never could remember which one it was until I thought, here's my I and here's my jaw. There's I and J, Israel and Judah. And I love my way of remembering better than your way of forgetting it. I don't know if that helps you at all or not. You know, if your brain lacks some attachments in there, so you can go over there and look in little boxes and find the answers. If you'll just stack it in there crooked, if you want to take something out of the house and you got to put it in the car and you absolutely got positive to do it. You know what you do? Go put a chair and block the front door. Let's put it in there crooked, okay? You, what on earth is, oh yeah, I was supposed to go pick up this or go do that. And that's what I'm talking about. And that's the only way I can stick things in my head. And I'm sorry, but it sticks. Israel and Judah. So he doesn't become king of the nation. In fact, there is Saul's son. His name is Ishbosheth. Ishbosheth. And there's somebody else that wants that man, Saul's son, to be king. Ishbosheth. Who is it? David had two allies in 1 Samuel, Joab and Abner. They were servants of King Saul. But Abner says, we're going to get Ishbosheth to be king. And so Abner works in the background to ensure that the lineage of the kingdom comes through King Saul. Well, that's not the case. People down in Judah, and that's the tribe David is from, isn't he? People down in Judah say, no, we want you to be our king. And so they immediately appoint him to be king over Judah. And then there is this struggle between those who do not want David to be king, those who want David to be king, and Abner is a part of it. As we study the book, we may talk a little bit about Abner. But after 7.5 years, that's a long time. Where were you? What were you doing 7.5 years ago? Okay, David, what's happened? Well, 7.5 years ago, I was made king over Judah. And now I'm king over Israel. Now that I am king over Judah and Israel. And so the totality of David's reign, anybody know how long David reigned? Well, Harold Pack used to say, anytime Dan says how many, jump at one or two answers. Now, if I tell you it's not 7, you know what the other one is? It's 40. King Saul reigns 40 years. King David reigns 40 years. And King Solomon reigns 40 years. Now, how long did it reign at the Ark? Not 40 years, 40 days, okay? So just get a little box and put 40 in there and stuff in that box all. Jesus fasted 40 days. Stuff all of these 40s in that one little box called a 40 box and just put it up there in your head. And it doesn't make any difference what the question is. Now, right beside you, put your 7 box. And Harold said, if he says how many, it's either 7 or 40. Now, that's not true. But he reigned 7.5 years over the southern part of Israel. That's got to be tough. I've been anointed to be king. Old Samuel came to the house, and Samuel anointed me to be king. And I've been king 7.5 years, and I'm not really a big king at all. He's 37 now, 37.5. All of those dreams he might have had whenever King Saul anointed him to be king, and how on earth is that ever going to happen? And when they were singing, you know, Saul's killed his 1,000, David's killed his 10,000, he thought, well, this is going to be a great life. I have got the greatest life on earth planned for me. That's not what happened in your life. You made plans for your life, and almost every time you've made plans, it's gone this way, hasn't it? Not every time, but much of the time, you feel like it's been this way. And if you're optimistic or pessimistic, you know, you say, well, nothing good's ever happened in my life. I don't believe that, by the way. But you could approach life. Here's David. Here's a man after God's own heart. Now, here's what it is, and I want you to hear this, because this is what you need to do and it's what I need to do. When things don't go your way, you must not let that impact your spirituality. Amy's shaking her head back there. Amy, how many problems have you had in the last 5 years, 10 years? One broken foot after another, you know, you understand what I'm talking about? But that's not Amy. I know the lives of so many of you. And so when adversity comes, what do? Though I walk through the valley. You know that? Who said that? David, you have any valleys? Yeah, I was in a valley one time when the whole army came and they were ready to kill me. I was in the shadow of death. But that rod, club, or maybe a walking rod that I could have used to destroy the lion and the bear, and that staff with that crook on the end of it that I used to help sheep when they'd fallen into pits. David looked at those times when there were rods in his hands and staffs in his hands, and turned that from life, turned that from his job, and turned it over to his life. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. And so David's in some pretty tough battles. But finally, and that's part of what we're going to study as we study through the book of 2 Samuel, he becomes king. And when he becomes king, he then starts on a road of ascendancy that is really, really amazing. He begins to defeat the nations. And you see the borders of the kingdom just expand outward and outward and outward. These Philistines, you remember the giant that was ahead of the Philistines? Yeah. And so they've been a thorn in the side of the people of God. And yet David begins to take all of these nations that have oppressed them, the Moabites and the Edomites and the Ammonites and all these nations that surround them and up north and everything. And he just takes his army out. He was a great general. And he went out and fought all of these battles. And now the borders of David's kingdom is not just Judah. It's not Judah and Israel. It becomes Judah and Israel and even more of that part of the world. And so whenever you think about David's ascendancy, see it as a balloon that's blowing up. Or if you do baking, see it as leaven inside a piece of dough or something like that. And it just starts out, and that's the way it's happening. And man, everything is going great. The most amazing thing is, one of those nations in that land were the Jebusites. And they occupied a city that goes all the way back to the time of Abraham, Salem. That's a name for that little city. And so you've got Melchizedek in Abraham's day, you know, king of Salem. And now here's Salem, and Melchizedek's long since dead. And guess who's occupying that land? The Jebusites. And guess what? Guess how they referred to that city? Jebusalem. Now, if you'll just fill your mouth full of marbles and practice saying that, you probably wouldn't be long before you wouldn't be saying Jebusalem, you'd be saying Jerusalem. Now I've said, fill your mouth full of rocks, marbles. Who was that Greek orator? You remember his name? that went down to the sea, had a voice that wasn't strong, and honestly, he filled his mouth full of gravel or something down there and would get down and shout out against the waves until he became a great, great orator. His name was, I think it's Demosthenes. I don't know. That's over in my marble box, okay? And so I thought, maybe I could try that as a preacher. And what he did was he just took out one marble, took out one stone a day. And so I thought, you know, I might could be a preacher. And so I even wondered, maybe if I wanted to have a speaking voice, I could fill my mouth full of marbles. And that would allow me to speak. I never did this, but I think I got to the end where I want to. No, taking out one marble a day. And when you lose all your marbles, then you're qualified to be a preacher. So here I am as a preacher. And so here's David. And he's growing and he's growing and growing and growing. And he destroys all of these nations. And then he takes Jerusalem and makes it the capital. It's been right in the middle of the whole time of the judges. It's a magnificent city. It is far more magnificent once David gets it, and especially when Solomon comes and builds the temple there and those kinds of things. But perfectly located, it's on the top of almost the highest mountains around there. It's be almost impossible for an enemy to come up there. And I guess that's why during the period of the judges, they did not drive out the Jebusites. They could have had they had enough faith in God and done what God said. But now, it's not the tallest mountain in that area, but in that area, it's the dominating mountain. There are more than one mountain. It's just a mountain range. And the name of one of those mountains is Zion. That ring a bell? Where's that come from? Well, we sing, "We're marching to Zion." Well, we're not headed to Jerusalem. But when the Jews were getting ready to head into the very presence of God, he was there at the temple that was there, and they came, and in the Psalms they talks about how beautiful Zion is. And it was a great joy for the Jews to come to anywhere to go to Zion, because that's where God is. And I'm telling you, when you sing "We're Marching to Zion," that's where you need to be. You need to be serious when you sing that song. "Come ye that love the Lord." Isn't that amazing? We're marching. We're marching to Zion. Beautiful, beautiful Zion. But if you don't know what Zion is, you're at a loss sometimes to even understand what we're singing. And so he names that city Jerusalem. And he first brings the Ark of the Covenant from wherever it has been before. He brings it to the city of Jerusalem. There's a problem, by the way, in getting it there. You remember how they were supposed to move the Ark? And you remember how they moved it in David's day? The Ark was not to be touched by any man, except maybe the priest in some way, but even the priest themselves. There were rods put inside of the Ark of the Covenant. Ark of the Covenant was not nearly as big as the Lord's table. Sometimes we think of the Ark, and no, that thing is what? Was it 2.5 cubits long? And 2.5 cubits would be 36 plus 8 plus 9 or something like that. It'd be 4 feet long, you know. That's about 4 feet. That's all the big the Ark of the Covenant was. But there were poles that went inside that, and so they didn't have to touch the ark. The priests would catch hold of these poles, and they'd carry it. It's the way the Lord intended for it to be moved. they put the ark on an ox cart. And it's not just an old ox cart, it's one that had never been used. I don't know how polluted ox carts would get. I don't know how much they'd be associated with oxen, but they could be pretty polluted. But no, this is God's. We're going to do this for God. We're going to give him. Well, obedience is what he wants. But you remember whenever they're moving that ark, you remember the ox stumbled? And the man that was in charge reached up to keep the ark from falling. And God killed him. Is that a lesson we need to learn about that which is sacred and is associated with God? Our society is very flippant in relationship to these things. Now then, look up at the top of that ascendancy. You recognize that name that's up there? When you get all the way to the top, when it's at its height, he's taken over the nation. He's ready to build the temple. It's his desire to build the temple. In fact, Nathan says, go do it. That's what we're going to study. It's not the last time you're going to hear of these things we're adding right here. I want you to have the overview. You see what's up there? And that's Bathsheba. And there's this one event that transforms David's life from being at the grandeur of being servants of God and winning all of these battles and bringing the ark and about ready to build the temple. And there she sits right up there, down to the pits. How far down does it go? Well, he's still king the whole time, but he's not accepted as king. And so the sin, you remember Bathsheba's husband's name? Uriah. And we're going to spend 2 or 3 weeks talking about this incident because I want you to know one event in your life, one decision that you make on the spur of a moment can transform your life. And so we're going to talk about the sin with Bathsheba. And does anybody remember who came and rebuked David? You remember that prophet that came and rebuked? Do you remember his name? Starts with an N. It was Nathan. And when Nathan told this story, and we'll look at this story, it's a parable that sneaks up on David, and David has no idea whenever he says, that man's going to pay for it. You remember what Nathan said? Nathan said, you know that man that you're just talking about? That's you. Thou art the man. How sobering is it? And so we've got one who says, thou art the man, about the consequences of sin. God will forgive, but sometimes we live with the consequences of sin. And the fact God forgives you the sin does not remove the consequences of it. And I've got this note here because you probably want to hear me say it. But the baby died. Innocent little child died. Got to go to heaven earlier, by the way. You don't feel too sorry for him in that sense. But God forgave David of what he had done. But the consequences were still there. Now, you look back in your life, which things happened that were not good. Painful, hard times. And part of the adversity you have in your life is the consequence of sin, not necessarily your own sins, but the sins of others. Now, what are you going to do with this anger? He's done me wrong. That's when we're going to talk about David and all of the people in his life who did it wrong. And you're going to hear me say several times, you better learn from the life of David how to deal with people you do not like. We love those who love us. Isn't that what Jesus said? You greet those who greet you. You love those who love you. Even pagans do that. Just because you're pretty nice to some of the folks, that's not what it's all about. When men curse you, revile you, say all manner of evil against you, bless them that curse you. Isn't that amazing? Do good to them. If your enemy's hungry, feed him. Isn't that exactly what Jesus did? And you're going to see in David why David is a man after God's own heart. And so we're going to spend some time looking at Psalms 51. I believe it's one of the most important. I believe in one sense it's more important than the 23rd Psalm. I know 23rd Psalm is wonderful. You know, thy rod and thy staff. But David has a heart like God. And David says, you know how much my heart is hurting because of what I've done? And that's Psalms 51. And then David's own son turns against David and tries to kill David. Now, you may have wanted to kill your kids at some time or another. Literally happened. It's Absalom. In fact, Absalom takes some of the wives of David, takes them to the housetop in Jerusalem, sort of to his palace in Jerusalem. Could have been, you know, could have been David's palace, whatever the domain David had there, and openly committed adultery with David's wives. That's his father's concubines. You think you've got problems? Absalom. And so the last thing we put there is this fleeing. 2 Samuel ends with David's flight. He's fleeing at the end of 1 Samuel. And when you get almost to the end of 2 Samuel, he's fleeing again. And then the last part there is just David's last days. The last four chapters of 2 Samuel are different. There's a lot greater peace. And when we get to that section of David's life, if we have time, I want us to look at some of the other Psalms. What do I need to have a heart like God's heart? Well, I think about Samson being strong and everything. Samson, show me your heart. Think about Peter, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. Let me see your heart. And there's the book of Psalms where David says, you know how I heard as a child of God? There was one time in my life I was ready to leave God. I was ready to quit the church. That's why Psalms is so important to us. And then the book ends almost with Solomon reigning. Now, it's only when they get to the third book of the Kings, which we call 1 Kings, remember that distinction, that Solomon becomes king. And Solomon almost did not become king. But becoming a Christian doesn't mean you're going to have the greatest life on this earth. Ungodly people have adversity in their life. God doesn't say you become a Christian, you'll never have a problem. You become a Christian, and God says, become a Christian, and you'll never have to deal with that problem by yourself. Walking through the valley of the shadow of death, thou art with me. Our problem is, when things are going uphill in the ascendancy, we think, I'm doing pretty good right now. My life's pretty good. You know, I've got a good job, making good money and everything. Everything's going pretty good right now. Instead of, the reason there is ascendancy in us, our life, every good and perfect gift comes down from the Father above. In everything, give thanks. Not just pray, pleading. Give me. God, help me. Prayers of thanksgiving is something we don't have. That's where we're headed. I hope you'll enjoy this study of 2 Samuel. Let's let it change our hearts. Thank you very much.